Hey, this is Evan flying solo, both in this intro and in this episode of the podcast. Adam, at this time, was on set shooting the Showtime series Black Monday, a fantastic Showtime series Black Monday. So you can tell it was pre-pandemic because that's what was happening when we recorded this several months ago. We've been sitting on this one for a little while. It's so great. It's such a great episode, and we're excited to put it out. This is a very in-depth and pretty long, wide-ranging conversation with one of our favorite Macroverse creators, as well as one of our creators that we just love in general, Jason Brubaker. We're going to talk about his history and his transition from working in film and television into making comics full-time. All the different things that he's up to. It's a lot. This dude is prolific. His series, Remind, launches on Macroverse this week, Wednesday the 27th, and then will come out on the app every Wednesday thereafter until the whole series is done. Anyway, great conversation. Really enjoyed sitting down with Jason. Just really enjoy Jason in general. And you can also see him live streaming every day right now on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. So we'll put some links to that in the show notes. I will be joining him every Wednesday for a while to hang out and do some drawing, meet some other creators. It's sort of like a virtual studio setting. I did it last week. It was super fun, super chill, great time. You get to kind of see a bunch of different people working on a bunch of cool things. So check that out as well. And then as of this coming Wednesday, that will be the 27th of May. Jump into Remind on Macroverse, which is just the beginning of the stuff that we'll be doing together as well. So enjoy this conversation. It's really fantastic. Awesome. So this is Evan sitting here with Jason Brubaker, who is the, I don't know, tour de force behind several series that we absolutely love. You know, we came across your work first with Remind and then Cythera, and then I really can't wait to ask you a bunch of questions about some of the latest stuff that you've been doing, which we've seen little bits and pieces of. And also, I'm kind of fascinated with the earliest stuff that you were doing and kind of the what looks like sort of the director's cut or the remastering of sort of an early, what maybe the earliest project. So we'll get into all of that. But I love it if you can just take a minute and actually just give a little introduction for yourself and a little background, and we can kind of go from there.
Well, good. Well, I'm Jason Brubaker. You can find my stuff at Coffee Table Comics. That shows you, it points you in all the directions of my books and stuff. I worked in Hollywood for about 20 years from the age of 20 on. You know, I just gave away my age. And worked with a lot of studios. I did storyboarding for commercials and movies and all kinds of stuff. And then I transitioned into animation, did cell animation for a lot of small studios. And then I transitioned into DreamWorks and worked on Kung Fu Panda, the trilogy, and did biz dev on that. And then after that, I was like, you know, I really want to do my own stuff. So I started putting out my comics online, and it started getting an audience. And then Kickstarter came out, launched a Kickstarter campaign in that first year that Kickstarter was live, and it just really kind of opened up my eyes to this possibility that I could make a living doing my own thing. And so then over the years, I kept producing books. I produced Remind 1 and 2, raised a lot of money on Kickstarter. And then I was thinking about moving out of town, trying to get out of L.A. so that I could, because I came from Idaho, you know, real slow-paced place, and my parents still live there, and I was like, you know what, it would be nice to get back there. I have two kids now, so they need to see their grandparents, and I need to, you know, lower the cost of living if I'm going to make these comics work.
Right.
And so we planned to move out there. I left DreamWorks, this great paying job, and sometimes I still think I'm crazy, but I'm doing exactly what I've always wanted to do now.
Yeah.
You know, it has different struggles. I'm always waking up going, should I do this or that? You know, and everything hangs on just every decision I make, if I'm going to actually make money or not. And I can't get fired, so that's nice.
I hope not. I hope you don't piss off your boss too much.
Yeah, I got to piss off a lot of bosses, you know, every customer, which could happen on social media, I guess. But so I moved to Idaho, and that was about almost 5 years ago now. And I've been just making comics ever since. I got picked up by Webtoons for Cythera, finished that run. It took about a year and a half to do that. And then and Cythera was done online about, 2018, like January, I think, or February. And so since then, I've been working on a couple other things. Mm-hmm. I've developed this thing called Cognitive Drawing, which is a drawing curriculum for, I'm kind of angling towards homeschoolers and whoever else wants it.
Yeah.
I've been retooling this old book that I created in high school called Phobos.
Yes.
And that's been really fun. And it's just been a big experiment for how to release it, though, because mm-hmm. I've been kind of doing it through Patreon.
Some ideas about that?
Yeah. I'm not sure if I have it figured out as far as how to, the best approach.
Yeah.
But it's this evolving type of game that I'm trying to figure out, you mm-hmm. know? And I did last year, 2019, I did a series called Shapes for Cave Pictures Publishing. And this was my first time getting hired to do a comic and write something. Mm-hmm. That was weird. I'm getting hired to write. That's odd. So I did that and it turned out really good.
Yeah.
And we're about ready to launch a Kickstarter. Actually, Cave is mm-hmm. about ready to launch a Kickstarter for that. For the hardcover book.
Yeah, very cool.
And then, you know,
Home for Sirens, yeah. Yeah. That's the being on set part. Okay, go ahead, sorry.
So and then that's kind of where we're at now. I've just finished development of Cognitive Drawing. We're ready to launch the Shapes Kickstarter. I'm still working on Phobos. I'll probably launch a Kickstarter or Indiegogo later this year for Phobos, the remastered version. There's more things. Okay, I finished a novel.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
Which is a horror novel. I don't know how I'm going to release it yet.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's a different audience than my comics.
Right, yeah.
So it was just something that, but I'm really proud of it. So I don't know what I'll do with that. Who knows? I may never see the light of day. But it was a good experience. And then I also completed recently a children's book, which is kind of a junior graphic novel called Pigeon's Progress.
Oh, very
and
good.
I don't know the children's book market.
Right.
So I'm going to try to shop it around to a publisher.
So you're like sitting on all this incredible material. That
too much stuff and I don't know what to do with it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I've been in this mindset of like, I must just finish intellectual property and get it done. The opportunities will present themselves later. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as I have the stuff, I can, you know, someone will approach me and be, hey, can we get something from you? And I'll be like, I have this thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of how I met with you guys. You know?
Absolutely.
You guys had this cool platform and I was like trying to figure out what to do. What's the second life with Remind and Cythera? Yeah. You know, what do I do with this stuff now that it's done?
Yeah.
You know, Webtoons isn't paying me anymore, you know? I don't know. But, and then you guys show up and I'm like, yes, someone gets it. So that's kind of the,
that's so
the,
cool.
Most of it.
Well, I want to touch on a bunch of the stuff, including kind of your creative process and way of working. It's a lot of what we talk about on this particular podcast is kind of really trying to dive a little deeper into like how people actually make stuff. Cause that's a part of what we get fascinated about. But I'm a little bit curious. So with the Cave Pictures project, mm-hmm. So they came to you and said, you know, we've got this, they had a germ of an idea to begin with, or they were like, we like what you do, make something up for us. Like what was the genesis of that?
I guess they acquired this property from an ex, executive of DreamWorks who was in charge of the, franchise development. And his name's Rick Reckadahl. I think that's how you pronounce the last name. I always feel like I'm making fun of him. He's going to wreck it all. But,
oh, that's funny.
So anyway.
Just call me Rick.
He's an awesome guy. And he had this idea that he's been sitting on for a long time since he was a kid. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't really very developed or fleshed out. But he had kind of the main characters kind of thought out, like these creature characters, which we ended up calling the Sovereigns.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of a loose concept. And then Cave, I had done a real short project with them called Plato's, the allegory of the cave, or the, I guess not the allegory, the Plato's cave, that allegory. Is it an allegory? I don't know.
We'll call it an allegory.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that was really fun. It was a 12-page short story that was, it was just really fun to work with those guys. And so I felt like, man, these are solid people. I trust them now. Mm-hmm. You know, I've worked with them. And then they just hit me with this thing right at a moment in my life when I was finished with a bunch of things and I was just burnt out. And I was like, I need just to find someone who's going to pay me to do a comic. And then they just literally emailed me the next day after having that thought. And I was like, yeah, okay. You know? And so, you know, I read over the idea from Rick, and it was, and I was thinking, okay, as long as I can have enough conversations with Rick to make sure that it's in the vein of what I want to do, you know, so it fits kind of what I would naturally want to write. And at first they just wanted me to draw it. And I was like, you know, I'm not interested unless I can write it. You know, they're like, well, do you want to write it? And I was like, well,
that's
okay.
That's kind of what I'm getting at here.
let me see this idea, you know? Yeah. So after reading through the concept, I made a bunch of notes and I had a couple phone calls with Rick that were a couple hours long, just going through all the ideas I had for it, what I didn't want to do, what I, the things I didn't, I wanted to avoid that everybody else seemed to be doing that was annoying or whatever. And he was just so on board with everything to the point of like even changing pretty big concepts in it to help it fit some sort of narrative. And so with all that, I was just like, okay, this is really fun because it's kind of become my project now, you know?
Yeah.
And so this was my first real attempt at just writing a script because normally I write visually. So I'll do thumbnails and then...
Well, you've got a storyboard background.
Exactly,
so that makes total sense, absolutely.
And I never thought of myself as a writer, you know, but I had to write a script.
Yeah.
And so this was a real test. And it was writing a script for a guy who headed up global... like franchise development at DreamWorks. So I'm like, okay, he's going to really point out a lot of red flags in my script writing ability. And it worked out great. And he loved it. And it was just like little tiny notes. And he was like, man, this is turning into such a great thing. So it was really rewarding. And because it was confidence building for me because I felt like I can do this. I can take a story from nothing and I mean, just be given a little seed of an idea and I can develop this story in a month and people who are really familiar with this industry love it. And so that was really kind of, it was a shot in the arm. It made me go, okay, I guess I can write.
Yeah.
So anyway, then it just turned into drawing it all, getting all that approved and then coloring it. And now it's being released. I think we're on issue 5 in stores coming out soon.
And your first kind of floppy in
there,
comic stores,
just
right?
Regular so comic shop type, you know, 20 page, 22 pages.
Yeah.
And then we're doing the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And so Cave Pictures really wanted to do a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But they didn't know how to do it.
Right.
And so I'm, you know, the Kickstarter guy.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, your project would be perfect. Can you please help us do this Kickstarter? So hopefully, you know, I'm really curious how that will work because it's not my campaign.
Right.
But I'm still going to push it because it's my book as much as Rick's. And I hope it works.
Yeah.
So, and I hope it works for them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of Rick's baby and I really hope that he can sell the idea and he has a lot of big ideas and visions and dreams for it, like as a trilogy.
Like where?
And, you know, he wants to make it into the next big thing. So
that's so cool, man.
That'd be great if it works.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's so cool. Well, I think it's interesting and let's kind of touch on this because I think it's interesting to talk about, you know, we have these kind of inflection points as creators where you do have that moment, which is like, oh, like this thing that I have kind of been adjacent to, like now there's some evidence of like actually being able to do this thing or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, some people have heard the story, but it's the way that Adam and I started working together is we kind of knew we wanted to kind of be people that make stuff, not just execute on stuff for other people. So we wrote a script together and we optioned that for a script and it was a little thing, but it was like that same kind of like, oh, like there's some value, like the thing that we think we can do, there's some external validation for being
someone
able
else likes
to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it makes sense. I think, you know, I think that's really interesting. And I think we're all kind of, you know, looking for that in some capacity while at the same time, especially as independent creators, you know, kind of not having to live in a world where we don't require that at the same time.
So
you just got to make stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, as you talk about that, it's like, you know, also think about even coming from, you know, if you've got a storytelling background, you've got a storyboarding background, you're working on things like Kung Fu Panda, it's like there's clearly a storytelling sensibility, even if you hadn't previously sat down and kind of delivered a script, so to speak. So as you're working on the other stuff, you know, if it's Reminder, Sithra, or any of those sorts of things, you're kind of, I'm assuming, kind of roughing or storyboarding things out. as a script, essentially? Or are you kind of working Marvel style with yourself,
essentially? I am. Like, I am kind of more of the Marvel style.
What does that look like? Yeah.
It's been more like I have an idea for a scene and a mood and a setting and kind of a visual or some kind of concept that I just figured out or a lesson I learned. Mm-hmm. And I'm taking all these moments, and trying to crush them into a narrative. And so that's kind of how Remind was. Remind was 15 years of just like life kind of getting pushed into this weird, obscure story that kind of represents like a lot of things that it's really strange, but it represents a lot of things in my life going on in that time period.
Sure.
You know, at least how it felt. Mm. And trying to convey that feeling to people, you know.
It's when you were in your brain swapping phase.
Yeah. This totally isn't my brain.
Yeah.
So, you know, that the whole brain swapping thing is like, it's like kind of, it's for me, it's more like brainwashing thoughts. And so anyway, it's evolved. The way I develop things has evolved because it was, from a young age, it was always just visuals and trying to convey that visual of that scene and whatever. And it wasn't until I was in my 30s when I started realizing the reason I like doing art is because of the narrative behind it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that's the only reason I'm into art is because the only art that moves me is a story.
Yeah.
That's just drawn beautifully.
Yeah.
So the art is like this beautiful way of being able to tell this deeper subject matter.
Right.
You know? And so when I started realizing that, that's when I started kind of changing the approach to how I write things, I think. Mm-hmm. And I'm, getting a little bit more confident in just the actual writing. Like to just write a novel is really odd for me.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of a test of like, can I just write something? And I mean, I hired a guy to help me and stuff.
Sure.
So, the whole concept of writing something and not having any of the things that are easy for me to do visually,
mm-hmm.
that's the ultimate test of if my storytelling is working, you know. I think I'm straying completely from your question.
No, that's great. Yeah.
It's definitely evolved, and it kind of started from that whole storyboarding mentality. Like, just do a bunch of little, like, weird scenes, get the feelings, get the kind of main message behind it together,
right.
and just try to string it together into a story. And then, after a while, I was working in Hollywood at all these different places. I didn't realize I could write anything. And I had these really old comics I brought into one of my friends once. And I let him borrow them, and these are things I did in high school. And like the old Phobos version.
Right, yeah.
And took it home and came back, and then I was like, so what do you think? Pretty stupid, right? And he's like, no, it was really funny. I really enjoyed it. And I was like, that was the first time it started clicking in my brain, like, wait a minute, someone actually liked what I wrote.
Right.
That's really weird. It's not just the art. Like, they actually liked what I wrote.
Yeah.
So anyway.
That's cool.
It's just been a process of kind of building that confidence and, but ever since I was young, I loved drawing. So that was never a question.
Yeah.
But why am I drawing? That kind of always became the question. Why am I drawing again?
Yeah.
And it's because I like to tell a narrative with art because art is the most beautiful way to get a narrative across.
Yeah.
I think.
And then there are comics, which kind of meld those two things.
That's perfect. Yeah.
That's perfect. Yeah.
And even animation and movies is another level up. But, mm-hmm. But with a comic, one guy can do the whole thing, which is what's so fascinating. I think, and all the artists I loved as a kid were artists that were the only
the
source
auteur.
Thing, like whether it's the comic strips like Calvin and Hobbes or the Far Side or even Garfield and stuff like that, all the way to like the comic books when, all the people left Marvel and formed Image.
Yeah.
They were just making their own thing. And it was like one person's vision.
Yes.
And it was so amazing and powerful for my little brain to wrap my brain around.
We had a similar experience. I remember feeling so like, everything is possible out of the image revolution.
Yeah. It's just, that was such an exciting time.
Yeah.
And so, I just dove into comics after that. And, and then I ended up here in LA doing storyboards. And so I was like, well, comics, you know.
Yeah.
I guess I won't do comics, you know. Right. That's for kids.
Yeah.
And I really just abandoned it like it was a kid's thing.
Yeah.
And I'm making money doing storyboards, but it's like I was just never enjoying any of it.
Yeah.
You know, it was like the most exciting time in storyboards was when I was finished early and I could go home and surf.
Right.
You know, like that was it. That was the highlight.
That's a pretty good indication that maybe you'd like to be doing something else.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, how did you find, a lot of people struggle with this, I think. How did you find the fortitude, whatever you want to call it, to just draw that line in the sand and say, like, I'm just going to change and do this other thing?
It was a progress, because I did storyboards for about 6 years, felt miserable in the middle of it after a while, you know, and then I was trying to do animation.
Yeah.
So, and that was the framework for Remind, was just this animated version of Remind. Mm-hmm. It was the cat fighting lizard men in a robot suit. And I just learned how to animate doing this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I transitioned in animation thinking, well, maybe this will be a career that I'll actually enjoy, you know?
Right.
But as soon as I got those jobs, I learned the skill. I enjoy learning it.
Right.
But after I learn it, it's not enjoyable because there's no point. Like, why? Again, why am I animating Barbie commercials? Why am I animating, you know, this thing for MTV or VH1? Like, I don't care about any of these things.
Yeah.
And I'm just working long hours and, you know, like interns keep coming in and taking my jobs. No,
right.
I had plenty of work. So it's like, it was never a question of, I'm not going to be able to get hired anymore because I was always, obsessing over this stuff. And also I learned this stuff and then studios would want to hire me to do it, obviously, because, you know, like if you figure out some new technique with animation and someone sees you can do it, they'll do that for me, please.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, the work was always there. It's just, I would get burned out at once I learned it.
Yeah.
So once the education part was done, I was just like, why? And same boat, you know, I'm doing this animation. I'm heading up these little teams of animators at these motion design studios, making good money, but I, why am I miserable with this? And then, you know, transitioned into DreamWorks. And I was like, well, these guys are amazing artists.
Yes.
You know, I want to do the viz dev with these guys now. You know, I got in because I can do animation, but I want to do the biz dev. So that was really fun for the first 3 years. And then I kind of felt like I learned it.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, not another painting, you know?
Right.
And so every transition I went through, it was the same thing. And it was only after I started putting Remind online as a webcomic.
Mm-hmm.
And it started kind of proving that, you know, it more than just my family was looking at it now, which was a big deal because that never happened before with a personal thing.
Mm.
And so suddenly, you know, there was 1,000 people or 2,000 people that would read a new page when I posted it on Mondays.
Yeah.
And then the Kickstarter thing came out and, you know, I made $107,000 on a campaign. And this was years and years ago before that happened very much.
Yeah.
So it was a huge like deal. And I would go to conventions and people would be like, you know, a little few people every now and then, but they'd be like, I love this. This is so amazing.
Yeah.
And then I'd go back to work and I'd be like, all right, let's draw this other thing. You know, work on this big epic $150 million movie. So it was just the separation of, and I just realized so much. And that's kind of when I started really seeing that I like the narrative in my art. I need to know why I'm doing the art and believe in the story and believe in the idea. Otherwise, why am I doing it?
You know?
And so that was just it. Kind of became the thing that just ate away at me more and more. The longer I worked on stuff that wasn't mine versus working on my own thing, you know.
Yeah.
And so finally, when it came time to, you know, make the decision and kind of weighing all the options for how to make that transition, it was tricky, but it was hard. But it had to prove itself, you know. Like so. The books and the comics and all that stuff, I had to make sure I could financially pay all the bills with it, you know? So the part of that transition was I needed to secure freelance work that I could do anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to get out of DreamWorks, secure freelance work, and then be able to work on my book part-time. And then as soon as like I set up those things, Webtoons approached me and was like, hey, can we pay you to do Cithra? And I was like, well, that solves all the problems, you know? So anyway, I'm just rambling on, but
it was
each one of those transitions I had a year of of testing with it. Like,
yeah.
I have to see for sure that this is going to take over paying mm-hmm. bills, and it's going to make sense. I can't just drop everything I've learned and just, you know, quit my job and go over here now yeah. and start this. And so that's kind of been the process. And now I'm just trying to figure out. Now it's like I have five projects right. in front of me, and I'm like, which one's the first one on the list?
Yeah.
And that's the biggest question now. But,
yeah.
But with all of them, I know the why.
Yes.
You know, I know yeah. why I'm doing them. I know yeah. why I'm writing them. And so it's satisfying in that yeah. sense. And I never feel like I hate doing this. The only thing I hate is like when it's like, you got to wear these ridiculous hats, like doing my taxes and
right.
and shipping and fulfillment. Like, yeah. oh, please. So now I'm actively trying to like set other things yes. up so I don't have to deal with those.
To build out the business part of the business. Yes, yeah. absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's so cool. I mean, you're speaking to, I think, you know, the kind of ultimate example of, you know, luck is being prepared.
And, I love that quote.
And,
yeah.
You know, what is it exactly?
It's luck like is
meets it's
when preparation meets
yes,
opportunity.
Thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm. When preparation meets mm-hmm. opportunity. And it's, I mean, you're just embodying that. So it's, yeah. I mean, I think it's so true. It's like, you've got to have the thing.
Yeah.
You got to do the work to have the thing
exactly.
for the right
yeah.
thing to pop up to mm-hmm. be able to take advantage of it. And
I tell people know. Every time I talk to people, like when they're asking for advice, I'm like, do a personal project.
Yeah.
Period. Like, you have to. Everything in my career has been from a personal project.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, you get pigeonholed into a corner that you don't like doing.
Yeah.
If you're doing these personal projects, people see what you shine at.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they want you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You may not want to have that exact career path, but you have to learn somewhere.
Right.
You're either going to go mm-hmm. to get to a college to get an education and pay and learn.
Right.
And you still don't get all the education you need
yeah,
until you're
yeah.
on the job.
Yeah.
Or you take all these crazy jobs for 10 years and get a crazy education and
yeah.
just, you know, trial by fire. You learn the deadlines. You learn
right.
how to deal with people and, you know, producers and directors and everybody, you
yeah.
know, other artists.
Yeah.
And then you can take all that skill and really, you know, funnel
channel
it into
it, yeah.
what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so cool. I love it. I mean, this is where I kind of get super geeked out and the kind of,
yeah.
you know, just the... you know, what it takes to make this stuff, the inspiration to make this stuff, the
yeah.
process of making this stuff. It's
yeah.
like, it's just, it you know, I want to keep this mostly about you, but you know, I think the thing for us with Macroverse and everything that we're doing now is like
yeah.
very much that kind of like, okay, like there's a path in front of me. I speak for myself. It's like, you know, there's a path in front of me that has worked for a bunch of years. Like we're,
yeah.
you know, again, kind of the same thing, like the, you know, making money or there's a career here, but it's just not what I want to be doing.
Yeah.
And it's like, how much longer
yeah.
am I just going to keep doing this thing that
mm-hmm.
is
mm-hmm.
From kind of an external point of view working, but just fundamentally not
yeah.
what's fulfilling and,
yeah.
and making me happy. And it was, you know, I was a little more willy-nilly about it than you were, where it's like, it was just like drawing the line in the sand where it's like, you know, the work that we do has to be stuff that we generate
yeah.
on some level. It can't
yeah.
be client work, and that's kind of what really turned the corner for me and for us, and
yeah.
You know, kind of led to everything that we're doing now. It's like, you know, it's not that we won't be, you know, it's like kind of like your most recent project, like we're willing to be paid by other people to do stuff,
yeah,
but we have to be part of the creative process
yeah.
and like
yeah.
really be kind of central to making that stuff happen.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
and it's you know, it's yeah, it's like there's still those challenges that come with every job and working with people and everything
mm-hmm.
else, but it's just
mm-hmm.
fundamentally about making that choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, yeah, it's kind of amazing where that leads. So,
yeah. yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so cool. So for people that don't know, just a little background. So, you know, I saw your material. How did I come across it? I guess as we were starting to get the app put together and we started looking for other creators, one of the things that I went and looked at is like, what are some of the Kickstarter projects that
mm-hmm.
looked like they, both were things that we resonated with from a quality and story standpoint, and then also,
yeah.
frankly, just had an audience because, like,
yeah.
this is something we can kind of
yeah.
build together. And so, you know, I mean, yours is one of the things that I immediately saw and was just like, this is awesome. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's in the kind of perfect sweet spot in my own sensibility of kind of,
yeah.
you know, beautifully executed. There's a real story at the core of it.
Yeah.
And then also feeling like, you know, you've had a pretty significant amount of success in the Kickstarter world, but I also feel like it's one of those things that really deserves a much broader audience, and we've got dogs running through the room. So, you know, it made me really excited about the work. And then as we kind of got to chat and know each other, I got really excited about the opportunity to work with you as well. And so it's one of the things that we're just so proud to have been able to bring to the platform. And it's been a ton of fun for me to be able to kind of actually try to, you have to tell me how good of a job we've done, but it's like to try to, every one of these, part of what's interesting about it is trying to kind of take apart the, what we perceive as sort of the thing you're trying to accomplish in the storytelling in the book, and then reconceive it for what we think the strengths of the platform are. And so it's been like, yours is one of the ones that's been a lot of fun to do that with. And I think it's, to me, the story I've made up about it is that it has something to do with your storytelling background or your storyboarding background, in that there's a way that you construct these sequences where they just lend themselves so well to the kind of tap through, you know, format that we have on the app. And so, you know, being able to kind of play with like how to tell the same story in a different way, but, you know, like still preserve the integrity of what the work is. That's the goal. So hopefully we've done a decent job of it so far.
No, I tell you offline, is I love the way the Macroverse app has helped the storytelling ability, just even though it's on a phone or something, you know. When I converted stuff to Webtoons, it just seems like there was something that was lost, you know. It'd be there would be that conversion, but then, you know, just it didn't satisfy me, you know, as much as as how the your guys' app is really, it's allowing you to just focus on nuanced details and have background images fading in and out and all kinds of stuff, you know. So to me, it's like it's taken it to the level it needs to be consumed on a phone. You know, and because otherwise you lose something, you know, every other version has lost something. And so I don't feel like your guys' app version loses it. It enhances what it needs to do. And there's a lot more work that goes into it to kind of recreate it in that way. It's not just cut and paste, you know?
That's for sure.
It's work for you guys.
Is. It is, but it is. It's a lot of fun, and it's, you know, like I say, it's been one of the aspects that I enjoy is like trying to put myself, you know, into your head on some level, or into your creative process on some level, and try to just execute it in a way that feels true to the material or the intention at the very least. So if anyone that's listening to this hasn't yet read Remind, give them like a little pitch on kind of what the story is, what the series is about.
So the short pitch that I pitch at conventions is it's a lizard man whose brain was stuck in a cat's body.
Yes.
And it's this quest of him trying to reclaim some of his old life if he can. And it's a lot. I don't know. There's a lot more to it. It's very personal to me. And I think some people grasp what it kind of could be about. But let's just give this little hint. So I was kind of part of like what people would call a cult for a little while. And so, so there's some influence. There's some storytelling elements that came from that experience. And it's weird. I just realized it kind of just not too long ago. Like, I think that whole experience kind of just organically, naturally came out in Remind. And I didn't really realize it, what it was about, until just recently. And now when I read it again, literally like a couple weeks ago, and I was like made my skin tingle. I was just like, oh my goodness, I really captured what I was going through. And like, that means this, you know? So there's some really weird things that were subconsciously done in it that, that now I feel like I'm finally understanding. It's really strange.
That's interesting. So, well, I mean, I think, you know, people say write what you know. I think that's, you know, that applies to the, whatever the medium is. It's like, you know, I think for stuff that really does tend to resonate with people, there's something of the creator in it, whether you fully grasp the extent of it or not. And I do think that, you know, without knowing the details of the story, I'm going to ask you about that off. but, you know, I think you do get the personal elements of it that, you know, without knowing those details, and, yeah. and that makes it more powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
And then I have to ask, so your latest release series outside of the Kid Pictures project is the Cythra graphic mm-hmm. novel series. So you mm-hmm. also write these, you know, create these very long, you know,
yeah.
Graphic novel Ooh. Series, which is awesome.
It's good. It's, yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. I mean, it is, but it's actually, I mean, it's just hats off to the, you know, just kind of not only what goes into it, but also just the execution and the follow through that is yeah. required to get to a, yes. you know, multi-hundred page, mm-hmm. You know, multi-volume story.
Yeah. yeah.
So, you know, one of the things I love about Cythra stylistically is it feels like it's one of the things it's something I'd actually been thinking about that you've done. So glad that someone has done this in a way that I think really works, uh-huh. where it kind of merges the language of graphic novels with children's books with mm-hmm. A little bit. There's some stuff that feels a little more concept art oriented yeah. and sort of brings these different stylistic, you know, kind of ways of telling the story together in yeah. one cohesive package. So yeah. okay. I mean, what was some of that, you know, thought process or creative process for you?
Well, you know, so I wrote Cythra about, I wrote it before I started Remind as a graphic novel.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I just want to make a Miyazaki film.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, you see that for and, sure.
So I wrote it as if it's going to be an animation that I work on yeah. for the rest of my life. And, you know, just someday. Then I switched to graphic novels and mm-hmm. did Remind. I was like, okay, Remind's going to be the test. Like, mm-hmm. if people care, you know. And so when I came back to Cythra, you know, I was like, knew I was going to make it as a graphic novel. I think I just finished reading the Harry Potter series mm-hmm. too. And I was just so in love with how you could just go into people's minds, you know, and thoughts and just kind of really follow, like, you know, what the character's thinking and feeling and all this stuff yeah. and the prose that was difficult in graphic novels. Yeah, sure, you could make a bunch of panels that kind of represent it. But to really be able to slow people down and have them feel what you want them to feel,
yeah.
you know, there was something missing between the two. And so I was thinking, you know, this would be really cool if I could just blend the two together. And I looked everywhere for other people that were doing it. And there was a couple books here and there that were doing it, but nothing was really a smooth transition
yeah.
from prose to graphic novel and back. Mm-hmm. It was a hard cut. Mm-hmm. Like, so there'd be comic panels and then boom, it's text
yeah.
and then,
yeah.
or big pictures and then text.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay. And usually when I approach a project, that's a personal thing. I go, there's problems I need to solve in this mm-hmm. industry. Like, what's broken about this medium that needs to be fixed that I can fix,
yeah.
you know? And with Remind, it was like, well, I think comics need to be hardcover books, and I think we should design them in spreads so that you can. And I think, you know, the you shouldn't have different color palettes on right. a spread, because if you pause a movie, you know, you feel that frame. Mm. But if you pause a page, you know, when you have a page open, mm-hmm. you can't do that if it's different color palettes
right.
everywhere.
Right.
And so there's all these things, oh, you know, that I was like, yeah. these are things that I need to show the industry, because right. at the time there wasn't a lot of hardcover
yeah.
graphic novels,
yeah.
and especially. And there wasn't a lot of long-form webcomics either
right.
at the time.
Yeah.
So now there's a ton of them, you mm-hmm. know. So I'd like to say that I had something to do with
we'll
the mindset
with
shifting.
Yeah.
yeah. But so it's a little oversaturated now. But anyway, I don't remember where I was going with this whole idea.
The combination of...
Oh, the pros. Kind
of,
okay.
know, demonstrating to the industry the combination of
yeah.
the pros.
So, yeah. So that was with Cythra. That was kind of my goal with fixing that kind of a book that yeah. was supposed to be a hybrid and showing the industry how to do it. And now I see them all over the place. And I you know, again, I don't know if I had an influence on it or not, but a lot of people were thinking that in that
yeah.
same way.
Yeah.
And like, my kids bring home books from school all mm-hmm. day long now that are all just these cool hybrids of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, man, they're doing it great. They do this and this, you know, but I had already as kind of established my rules for Cythra. So,
yeah.
I'd started it that way, so I had to just finish executing it that
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
And it happened to be 1,000 pages long, so it's like it took a while to get through it,
yeah.
you know. And you know, with Phobos, the new book, it's like it's just a different set of rules that I'm applying, and a different type of feeling and mood. And what I'm trying to do is recapture the old film noir classic horror type stuff, like the Wolfman and all that stuff, where the crazy lighting, you know, all across the face, and, you know, really, really focus on dramatic lighting.
Yeah.
But capture that in a comic book. You know, you see these black and white comics, but they're just black and white.
We make one.
You guys, this is great, you know. But I just wanted to capture that cinematic, even this film grain feel to it, you know? Absolutely. And if I can make people feel that way, then I've accomplished something.
Yeah.
And Phobos, I'm going all over the place.
That's
but Phobos is like, the story now is, it's looking at like 1,500 pages.
Amazing.
So I'm just like, why am I doing this again?
I can't stop.
Yeah. I think it's going to be my book that I do in between other things.
Yeah.
And then by the time I'm almost dead, people will be like, please get the last book out, and I'll be like, I'll try, you know.
George R. R. Martin.
You'll be that type of thing.
That's super cool. So it sounds like for every project, like, you're not only coming into it like, what story do I want to tell, but you've got some idea about kind of what's the creative part of this, or the challenge that I want to try to execute on.
What do I want to kind of solve in the industry, and also, what do I want to do that's different from my previous work, so that I'm figuring it out for the first time?
Yeah.
And so that keeps me excited.
Yeah.
And then also, that's just the main thing. I don't think I could do the same kind of work for 40 years.
Yeah.
You know? So if I am going to continue making comics, they need to all have their own unique thing to them, so that I'm excited. And I really think I need to, like, limit it to like 3 years on a project.
Yeah.
Because beyond that, I just start getting bored. Because once I've learned all those things and proven that it works this way, or proven that you should do a story this way or that way, in my own mind. Yeah. I don't know if anyone else cares, but I've proved it to myself. Yeah. You know. Once I've gotten past a certain amount of years, like, and I'm thinking about the next project and I'm excited about the next one, it's really hard to keep going on that last one.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of one of my new rules going forward, is 2 to 3 years max.
Yeah.
You know, which is why Phobos is going to be such a problem.
I don't know. Maybe you have to do it like, you know, every 3 years.
It might be that, you know. Yeah,
they take a break.
Come
back to it. It'll be the movie trilogy version of this. Here's the first one, then you got to wait a while.
And, you know, Phobos, I've also done it in such a simple style, and it's so easy for me to do it because I've drawn these characters ever since I was a kid.
Yeah.
So it's just, it kind of comes naturally, and it's fun to just fall back. It's kind of like falling back on this thing that's just easy to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, but it's not serious, you know. There's serious themes in it, but the story is just totally stupid.
Yeah.
You know, it's supposed to be fun, you know, just get people to, enjoy reading it and check out, you know, a little bit.
Sure.
So, yeah, but the overall themes are very, very heavy.
Well, that sounds like another good combination.
I love those kind of stories where it's just like an intense, epic story, but then it's just laced with stupid humor.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
So I don't think a lot of people do it, or a lot of movies or stuff have done it successfully.
Sugar to, you know, get the,
exactly,
get
the medicine
down.
Yeah. So Phobos will be one of those ongoing things.
Yeah.
There's a couple other stories that I really want to dive into that are really serious, that I really think I'm really excited about, but, you know, I don't know if I'm quite ready yet to tell them. I don't know if I'm one of them. I think I need to be an old man to actually be able to say
interesting
the message.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's I guess I don't want to give it away, someone else will write it, but there's certain characters that I feel like I need to understand it from that point of view in order to, I don't know, that's probably the flawed way of thinking, because, you know, I can write a girl character and I'm not a girl, so.
Right. Well, but, you know, I wonder, that's interesting, because I think I'm sure you could do it now, and I also am sure that you would have a different take on it with experience.
What I probably need to do is write it a first draft now, and then assess it when I'm older. Then, you know, put those little nuances into it at that time. But then again, you know, like, oh man, that means I gotta wait 20 years, 40 years. That's no fun.
It can be another one. You can be in between.
But, you know, there's plenty of ideas. So that's the one thing that I've realized I was always worried that ideas would run out. Like, once I get through this catalog of ideas in my mind, you know, what am I going to do?
But they keep coming.
Yeah. Man, it's like you cannot keep up with them.
Well, it's not, I mean, I think, you know, you've spoken about this, but it's like, you know, you're pulling from your own experience, from your own thought process. And so as you continue to have experiences, those are going to filter down into new ideas.
It just, people ask, where do you get the ideas? I'm like, you just live your life. Yeah. Like, oh my goodness. Where can you not get ideas? You know, go on a vacation. You'll be like swamped with crazy, you know, cultural differences.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, what? You know?
Yeah.
So it's just like everywhere. Everybody you meet is part of an idea, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
So it's, I think the only thing that can really limit your ideas is if you lock yourself in a room and try to just be creative without experiencing anything.
Yes, 100%. You know? I mean, I always tell people too, it's like, you know, you've got to, you know, it goes back to the kind of write what you know concept, which is, you know, you can tell any kind of story, but you've got to find a way into it that means something to you or that has some personal element to it. Because otherwise, how do you find, you know, it's like, otherwise you're just inventing something. And with pure, something that's purely invented, it's like, I feel like that generally falls pretty flat.
Yeah. I like to take, you know, real life things, but then, you know, like a cat with a lizard brain. Yeah. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
But I understand what it means to me. Mm-hmm. But if I were to just say a story about something I went through, it would kind of fall on a lot of deaf ears because, you know, everyone has a different worldview. Everyone has different religious beliefs or whatever, you know. And if you say this story is about this religion or whatever it is, you know, or for Democrats or Republicans, suddenly you make everyone else go away who doesn't want to listen.
Yeah.
And so if you just, you know, put these concepts into fantastical characters and just let the story be the story.
Yeah.
And it's so much more enjoyable, and you can basically kind of say whatever you want, as long as it's just fantastic worlds, you know. And so I love that side of storytelling.
Yeah.
And I don't ever want to like push political messages, and I don't ever want to. I think everyone has an agenda anyway in storytelling.
Yeah.
So I mean, why are you telling a story? You know,
you're
telling a story to get an idea to someone else's brain.
We hope so, at least.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it can just be for entertainment, you know?
Of course.
But I don't think that, you know, it lets people check out and they can just be, it's like watching a basketball game, you know, it's entertainment. And so that's great, you know? But I don't know, that it's like everyone has an agenda in storytelling. Everyone who's a part of working on a movie, you know, like whether it's just, I want to just make money or I want to infuse this idea into it. Mm-hmm. And so like, I don't know. That's one thing that kind of I realized too, is like, I just kind of embraced that. Like everyone has an agenda. Everyone has a message. Like I shouldn't be afraid to say my message, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's just been really, it's been rewarding as just a person just trying to get ideas out of your brain. Mm-hmm. And like, because it's all about wrestling with, you know, struggles or ideas or concepts or, you know, situations, and like, how do I deal with this? And it's kind of like, it kind of ends up coming out as like a therapy for myself.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think, you know, stories are powerful. I think stories change the world.
Oh, they absolutely do. 100%.
And I think art influences culture. And so I think there's a real big responsibility to storytelling. And that's why I don't think I was very satisfied with just working on random things just for a paycheck, because I'm actively influencing the world and beautifying a message. But if I don't believe in that message, then I'm actively, you know, changing the world in a direction I don't want.
Right.
You know? So anyway, so I think there's a huge weight and responsibility on artists to be honest with their stories and what they're doing, not just try to like do it because it sells, not just try to do something because, you know, it's popular, because it might be popular, but it might not be the right pill.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
It might not be the medicine that's going to help society grow in a good direction.
Yeah.
So, wow, I'm getting, it's, you know, but that's the way I look at stories. You know, it's just,
I agree
so
with you.
Important, I think.
And I think you can map that, I mean, again, without any sort of political or ideological agenda,
yeah,
I think
yeah.
you can very much map that onto the things that really do catch fire in a
yeah.
significant way, you
yeah.
know, worldwide and the, you know, kind of pop culture landscape,
yeah.
you know, whether, I mean, you could talk, you could overlay that on everything from something like Endgame
yeah.
to Star Wars
yeah,
to,
yeah.
you know, the things that, you know, really are the kind of cultural touchstones for the
yeah.
largest number of people. I think that holds very, very true.
Yeah.
I
mean,
and,
look at how
yeah.
Star Wars changed our whole generations
yeah.
of people.
Yeah.
Like, it just influenced everybody's childhood
yeah, absolutely.
When it came out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it still is now, but not as much to me as back
yeah.
in 1977
yeah.
or whatever.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's talk about, you know, exactly what you've been saying, which is, you know, here's, you know, George Lucas saying, like, how do I communicate these
mm-hmm.
things that are interesting to me, that are important to
yeah.
me? You know, overlaid with this sort of mythological framework.
Yeah. That's
with,
the perfect
know,
example. Yeah.
It's the perfect
mm-hmm.
example. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's so many things you can take from that story that are not just the robots and laser
yeah.
laser
yeah.
beams on the on
yeah.
the screen. And so, I mean, I do think like there's an incredible amount of power. And if you choose to take it on responsibility around, you know, being
yeah.
having the ability to craft that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think is very impactful
yeah.
and
yeah.
powerful and man, doing
and,
doing the Lord's work for lack,
yeah.
of, lack of a better
and,
way
you know,
to say
it's,
it.
And also it's like, it's kind of what motivates me to keep doing it. Like
mm-hmm.
it comes back to the why, you know, like unless I have a good why behind it, and I'm teaching a class for CGMA right now on
yeah.
making comics. And that was the first thing was, why are you guys,
mm-hmm.
why do you guys want to make comics?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Is it just because you think they're cool? Like, that's
right.
not a good why.
Yeah.
Do you want him to just draw chicks with guns and explosions? That's not a good why. You know,
now
you
we're
can,
back in the
you
90s.
Can do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can do that. But it's not a good why. It's
yeah.
not going to motivate you to keep getting
mm-hmm.
up and doing the work when it's really hard to
right.
get it done.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You might as well just go get a freelance job.
Right.
Because drawing a 1,000-page epic is a lot of work and it's really hard.
Yeah.
And there's times you want to quit. But if you have a good why and a good reason for telling that story, then it's the thing that pulls you through it. Like,
yeah.
I'm the only one that can tell the story.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's so motivating is, you know, just that concept. Like, I'm the only one that can tell my stories.
Yeah.
You know, anyone can rip me off.
Right. Sure.
But they're going to tell it complete. Like, who would rip off her mind and tell
it? Oh, wait,
it?
I haven't mentioned our lizard cat bracelet story that we're
yeah, I mean,
on.
you can totally make your own version, but it's not going to be as weird. Like, it's,
yeah.
it comes from a different brain.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, of course.
And so, yeah, and that was one thing that I was really wrestling with when I was making that transition out of DreamWorks and out of LA was if I die tomorrow, and this is morbid, but if I die tomorrow, am I pleased with the stuff I've been working
Dude,
on?
Dude, it's morbid, but that drives my entire life
it's,
right now.
It's so
like,
big for
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
yeah. And it comes back to the why. Why am I doing this? You
yeah.
know, like my parents are getting old. I've had conversations with my dad. And he's like, man, I worked this one job. I just moved barrels, you know, radioactive barrels from one pit to
yeah.
another and
yeah.
put dirt over.
Wow.
That was my career. And he's like, I don't know if that meant anything
yeah.
to anyone. I was just, what? You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's like, I think everyone struggles with that whole thing. Why
yeah.
am I doing what I'm doing?
Yeah.
And so, but with this, it's like, it's really tangible. You can really
yeah.
taste it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's, you know, I don't know if you feel this way, but it's like, you know, as you get older, you know, I think
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be 45 this year, which seems crazy to me. But, you know, it's like, I've been just acutely aware, really since I hit 40, like over the past
yeah.
5 years more than ever, it's like there's less time ahead than there is behind, probably,
yeah.
hopefully not, but probably.
Yeah. yeah.
And, you know, when it comes down to it, like, you know, the things that I'm doing on a daily basis, no matter how hard they are, like, am I going to be happy with the fact that I did that,
yeah.
that I took the chance that I, you
yeah.
know, took
yeah.
the risk that I, you know, made the attempt, like, you
mm-hmm.
know, it's like at the end of the day, at the end of the life,
yeah.
What does
mm-hmm.
that look like looking back? And I'd rather fail miserably
yeah.
than not have gone for it. And it's just become something that's like, you know, I wish I had had that awareness younger, but
yeah.
it's omnipresent and it really does drive a lot
yeah.
of the thinking
yeah.
or the thought, you know, the willingness to just go like, no, we're doing it.
Yeah.
Know?
I don't know if, I mean, do young people have that kind of thought.
I mean, I
would assume somebody might, but I think it's a product of living life and seeing how worthless it could be if you continue the pattern you're doing. And saying, I'm going to actively go against that and pursue something that has meaning now, you know? It's interesting. It's a tough subject. It's like, what is that deathbed message basically?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And you can have a deathbed message for every one of your books. Like, if you were to, if today was your last day, what do you want to tell your kids right now?
Yeah.
You know, exactly. What do you want to tell the world and your kids? And you know, that shifts and it changes because you learn things every year and every day.
Yeah.
It's so important. And I think a lot of entertainment has lost touch with that. Mm-hmm. You know, it has just become entertainment. And I think that's part of the reason it's not very interesting to me anymore. Mm-hmm. A lot of entertainment, you know.
Well, there's also so much of it, so it's amplified through.
True. Yes.
You know, the magnitude of stuff. But I think I see that for sure.
And I'm not interested in like hammering someone, like preaching to someone. I don't like that either. You know. So it's just like, it's like Miyazaki stuff. Like I don't believe in anything he believes in, but I am invested in his worlds.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. I will understand everything that's going on and I go, okay, that's an interesting way to look at life, but I love participating in it.
Yes, absolutely. You know?
And so that's a cool conversation that Miyazaki is having with me of what he believes and how he sees the world.
Yes.
And you know, like, that's so good.
Yeah.
Just having those conversations.
It's so good. Yeah. Yeah. So here's a random question off the Miyazaki path. Do you love cats? Or do you have cats? How have cats become such an important?
It's so weird. You know, when I was doing Phobos back in high school, turtles. I wanted to have turtles hidden in all my art, and I would, you know. But then it kind of evolved to cats for some reason. I had cats when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I was never super in love with them. I like dogs more.
Yeah.
But when I was trying to make this animation, it was all about the visuals. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted a cat in a robot suit, and it just kind of became this thing visually that was really pleasing.
Yeah.
And so once that kind of connected with people and I realized people loved it, I was like kind of like sad because it's not like I can keep doing Remind forever.
Right.
And then I was like, well, I could just keep using these characters.
Right, right.
And so that kind of became my whole thought process is I'll just recycle my characters. They're actors now.
Right.
You know?
So you're
so the cat's
casting
and everything. Yeah. You know? He's just a different character now. Mm-hmm. He might be a side character now. And in fact, after Remind ended online, I made this little web comic a couple months after it was all over.
Yeah.
And it was the cat on the beach,
uh-huh.
on a chair with sunglasses, and he was sitting there and drinking something. And all of a sudden his phone rings and he picks it up and he's like, hello. And it was his agent. He's like, oh, I got another part. I'm not going to be the main character. What? You know,
I don't
remember exactly what it was, but it was like, it just kind of sold the idea. Like, okay, like, just get comfortable with these characters being recycled now.
I love
it.
That's great. It's your American Horror Story approach. Yeah.
So it's just fun. And plus, you know, like once you draw a character and you fall in love with it, you don't want to necessarily stop drawing them.
Right.
It's not like I love inventing new character, like concept. I'm not a concept design artist. You know, so that's not my, I can't sit there and draw 100 different characters in a sitting and be like, yeah, these are all great. You know, I really struggle with coming up with those character designs.
Mm-hmm.
And then they become like part of me. And so, you know, when I have a new story, it's like, yeah, that I could use that character again here, you know, and I missed this character. So I'll have this person be here. And so it's just kind of, it's fun because since I am changing the stories every 3 years, I can still have something that resembles, something from the past, you know? So it solves both of those problems of familiarity, but then also new and unique.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just same characters, different style.
Yeah.
You know, maybe. So,
very cool. Yeah.
And Phobos is still, it's all on its own. I mean, I created those characters a long time ago. Yeah. So and they're ripoffs of all the Universal horror characters. So it's not like I'm really, you know, reinventing anything. But
I could talk to you about this stuff all day, but tell me. So let's talk about Phobos for just a few minutes then, because I am a little bit fascinated with, you know, there was a comic that I made, the first comic that I made when I started in high school, finished it the first year of college. I would never revisit that material. Yeah. So other than handing it, you know, handing this early version to a friend of yours and him kind of enjoying it, like, what was that?
Why?
Kind of, why was the thought process, you know, why is that kind of the next epic?
I think it's just, I just love when I reread the old stuff, there's just something so familiar and real about the characters. Mm-hmm. and they're kind of since it's kind of on these themes of, you know, classic horror, like werewolves and vampires and mummies and stuff, it's kind of this thing that I'm kind of always kind of in love with a little bit. And so reading my old version of it was just like a stream of consciousness coming out, and it was just so raw and real and enjoyable to read it.
Yeah.
Even though it was so flawed in its execution, whenever I would pick it up, I'd fall back in love with it.
Yeah.
And so after, you know, 20 years of like learning to like actually tell stories and stuff visually and through text and whatever, I was like, you know what, if maybe I should just try to do this with all the tools I know, all the techniques and tools and knowledge and abilities that I have now. And would it be enjoyable to do that if mm-hmm. I were to try to take it on again? And so it was kind of an experiment when I was at DreamWorks. I think it was when I was in between Remind 1 and 2. I just at night after I put the kids to bed, I just went out into my garage. That's where my studio was at the time.
Yeah.
And just would spend an hour or two just trying to work on new pages and just to see if it was fun.
Yeah.
And to see if I could, you know, retell this story, but in a more well-told way, you know, and actually solve the problems that were there. Because this was also at that time when I didn't really know if I could write very good. Mm-hmm. I still wasn't even finished with Remind.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if I could actually finish a story. So, like, wrestling with Phobos, I must have rewritten it, like, 2 or 3 or 4 times, like, the whole epic adventure, the whole arc, and just bullet point list, you know, type storytelling. And, you know, I redid it, and I was finally like, I think this is really good, you know? And it was weird, like, I had printed the first comic as a floppy again, just to try to learn to print. And there was a friend of mine who was a producer for, like, Disney and different things, and he pitched the comic to someone. He's like, this company in like Europe is interested in buying the rights to Phobos. And I was like, out of everything I've done, they want this was the high school version.
Right.
I was like, what is it about this weird story that, you know, and nothing happened with it.
Yeah.
But it was the only thing to this day that, you know, is like, it seems like was close.
Right.
Know? I shouldn't say that. Okay. So I'll tell you off camera. But, so anyway, there were some other things too with Phobos that just kind of made me go, there's something here, you know? And then every time I look at it, I'd fall in love with it. And then, so I kept rewriting. Yeah. Then I started working on these pages at night and spent a couple hours. And I showed it to some friends, you know, at work, and they're just like, that's awesome, you know? So I was just like, okay, well, I know I could start this over. I could relaunch this. I just need to get Remind done. Yeah. And then I started Cythra, so I need to get Cythra done. And then, you know, Cythra was winding down, and I was like, well, I could start the next serious one, or I could dive back into Phobos again. Yeah. And you know, so every time I jump into it, it's like, it's one of those weird situations where I'm like, I don't know if I should be doing this, but it's fun.
Yeah.
You know? So that's why I'm like, oh, I'll just keep working on this for the rest of my life. Eventually it'll get done, maybe, you know.
Hey, man, so, maybe it's your ongoing series.
It could be,
Spider-Man or whatever.
It's really set up to be that, you know? There is a grand arc, but then I've just realized in talking to a friend of mine that there's another arc that I could play with after that. And I'm like, oh no, that means what, 2,000 pages?
50,000 pages. Yeah, come on, let's set this in a bar.
Battle Angel, Alita Battle Angel series.
That's right, exactly.
Which is great. I'd love it to be a Battle Angel series. You know, I mean, that's huge inspiration right there.
Yeah.
So, so I did kind of have an epic idea for releasing the first one. I wanted to do a 500-page book for the first volume. But I think my friends have talked me into doing it as a 300-pager for the first one. And and the story... the basic arc with that is the main girl character getting situated in this castle with this mad scientist and Frankenstein character and becoming the assistant, actually getting the job. And you know, it's a pretty simple story, but it's just really enjoyable. And then the next volumes will get more into like this more epic adventure, and you know, it really depends on how the audience reacts to it. Once that first 300-page volume comes out, if the Kickstarters do well and if people keep loving it, you know, and then you know, I could switch gears and do it full on.
Sure. But
it's at this point, my stories kind of need to prove themselves financially. Otherwise, I just can't do them. You know, like if I can't make money, then I got to get a job somewhere else.
Right. Yeah.
So it seems really, I don't know if a lot of people who aren't in this position understand that, but you know, because sometimes I'll post things online and people will be like, you're just in it for the money. I'm like, dude, I don't make hardly any money. You know, do you know how much work I do?
Love, man.
I mean, I would like to make money, but and I gotta sell stuff in order to actually make a living so that I could pay the bills so I can keep making stuff.
So
that's the real test, is like if this stuff can actually connect with an audience. You know, I love it, and I can connect with it, but it needs to connect with an audience.
You know, I actually love you saying that, and I think it's an approach that I think a lot of creative people really struggle with, which is, you know, it's interesting. This is something I've had to kind of turn the corner on in my own thinking, especially as we've launched the app and kind of changed to kind of like being essentially we're operating as a startup. So it's like there's a lot of that mentality just out of pure necessity, which is try something, see if it works. Get the data, make adjustments, and, you know, and, you know, some things work and some things don't work, but it's, you know, being willing to, you know, do those tests and to get real honest feedback and then respond to that honest feedback. And I think it's hard as creatives because we get so attached to our material, our story, whatever. But I think it speaks to, you know, also, you know, if you can always come back to things, you can always, you know, let things develop. But at the same time, like you're saying, it's like, if you can't sustain something financially, you can't do it. And that's part of the whole package. So it's like, you know, unless you're going to have a regular job and do it at night or on the weekends, which is not what you want to do. You've done that. then, you know, that's the kind of thinking that I think actually facilitates doing the work that you want to do. And it's not a negative to say, you know, let's try this and see if we can cultivate an audience for it. And if that one doesn't work, I can do something else and come back to that later.
Exactly. I mean, 2,000 pages, that's a big commitment. You know, if people aren't buying it, then I can't do it for free.
Yeah, exactly. And, exactly.
But I think every artist struggles with that. And it's a transition that I think every artist has to do, because everything starts out as a fun project on the side.
Yeah,
that's exactly what everything is. And you can just dive into that passionately. Because you're not worried about it paying the bills. Yeah. And then, you know, you have to have a job or something to pay the bills. And so these personal projects are just so like freeing and fun and rewarding. And yeah, I'll just say what I want to say.
Right.
But then as soon as you transition into that project has to pay the bills, you know, well, you suddenly, you know, like, yes, I want to dive into it and be passionate about it and say what I want to say and not worry about if people will buy it. But if they don't buy it, then, you know, what do I do? You know, I guess I could go back to working the day job.
Sure.
You know, but then I can't execute the production of these projects.
Yeah.
You know, and like this last year, it's been so incredibly fruitful as far as projects.
Yeah.
And getting done, and none of them are released, but it's like it's so neat, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And you know, just as far as financial stuff, like that's part of the reason I'm doing. Not all the reason, but the cognitive drawing thing. It's like a drawing curriculum people keep asking me about it. People love it. And I, you know, I tried it just because people asked, mm-hmm. you know, how would you learn how to draw? And so I tested it on beta testers. People liked it. They had notes. And so I've kept redeveloping it and thinking, oh, I don't want to finish, you know, this, mm-hmm. no, put this on the back burner. And finally it's at a point where it's like, okay, I've been working on it forever on and off and now right. it's done. And so now let's just try it. And yeah. if it can really connect with like homeschoolers or charter schools or whatever, yeah. Yeah. then that could be, you know, it could be a problem solver for the passive income.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know? Because every year there's new students, mm-hmm. you know, coming into those grades.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like, it's weird to think that way, but you kind of got to think that way.
I think you absolutely have to think that way. I think there's a mythology that around like, you know, creativity and business being two different worlds. And,
yeah.
you know, and for better or worse, it's like, you know, that I think gets in people's way of actually being successful. Cause you've yeah. got to think about like, you know, I have to find a way to facilitate this yeah. work that's so important to me.
Yeah.
And the reality of that is if you're going to have any sort of meaningful lifestyle and have kids and, yeah. you know, if you're going to yeah. make those sorts of choices and have those elements mm-hmm. in your life, then you have to figure out a way to make all those things yeah. work. And yeah. it's different for every person what the thresholds are. Yeah. But, you know, I think that that piece of the conversation is so left out. And it's, you know, this yeah. is one of the things where I went to RISD, which was, you know, arguably one of the best art schools in the country. It was an yeah. amazing experience. My biggest complaint coming out of that school was like, great, I know how to draw now.
Yeah.
There's not one class about how to manage the business of being an yeah. artist. And I'm an illustration student. This is a fundamentally commercial yeah. endeavor. Mm-hmm. and, you know, so I caused a little bit of trouble when I graduated because I put a letter out to all the departments going like, this is a failing of this school. Like, yeah. you know, I had an incredible experience. And this is a total failure. How yeah. many of the people that aren't, you know, don't have the mindset to go seek it out for themselves mm-hmm. are going to go out there and either have to go through a real school of hard knocks
yeah.
or just fail yeah. because they didn't know that they needed to have that be part of the equation.
Yeah. yeah.
So, you know, I think it's critically important, yeah. especially as independent creators, that mm. is not something that gets ignored and it's not yeah. something that doesn't get talked about and it's not, yeah. you know, an embarrassment. It's like,
I feel like I still wrestle with that. Mm. I wrestle with justifying having to make money and yeah. it's because it's been, that mindset has just been pushed into me, you know?
It's the same thing as the starving actor, the starving artist. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a story around what it is to be that, or yeah. the mythology around what it is to yeah. be that. There's almost a, you know, almost a noble, you know, quality to like, yeah. you know, everything for the art and yeah. you know, yes, that, I think that's valid. But at yeah. the same time, it's like, you know, I think we want more people doing the work that they love doing mm-hmm. and we mm-hmm. want more people that are doing work that's meaningful to them and hopefully yeah. for other people. And, yeah. and it just has to be part of the equation. It just has yeah. to be part yeah. of the conversation.
Yeah. That's great to hear you say that.
Yeah.
I know.
And we hope that we can be a big part of creating that passive
income. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. You guys are right in the heart of that yeah. whole yeah. situation. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a small motivator for why we're doing what we're doing. It's like, mm-hmm. there has to be a way to empower, you know, mm-hmm. really high quality, independent creators yeah. to also make money. It's yeah. like, it's gotta be part yeah. of it. You know,
it's such yeah. a, yeah, it's such a huge part of it. And yeah, it's, and you know, it's weird because the online success is so seductive, but yeah. it's also, it doesn't represent reality, yeah. you know? So like raise $107,000 on a Kickstarter campaign.
Right. Yeah.
And then the reality is I go into debt $15,000 to right. fulfill that campaign.
Yeah.
No one ever sees that side of it,
yeah. Yeah.
you know? And so, yeah, it's one of those things that it seems like most artists have to just deal with on their own. Mm-hmm. You can't really complain about it online because then, you know,
right.
you made all this money.
Yeah. Yeah. But I, you know, I think, I mean, yeah. it's everyone, you know, again, everyone has their own thresholds around what they want to share, but you know, yeah, it's like yeah. there's a phenomenal comic artist that I knew when she was a kid and, you know, mentored a little bit, and she's gone on to be incredible, named Lucy Bellwood. Mm-hmm. But you know, one of the things I love that she does is like every year she actually opens her books publicly.
Oh, that's cool.
She's
yeah.
like, you know,
yeah.
this is what I did and this is what I made and this is what my expenses were. And like, yeah. I mean, just kind of really walks through like, this is what my business looks like this year. And then,
that's
you know, you
cool.
kind of get to see year to year, like how that's working. And she's just real frank about it. And it's
that's
really
cool.
empowering actually to
huh.
see like,
yeah.
this is how this actually works.
I love the transparency, in like, I feel like I've been really transparent with my audience, but after I left, well, okay. Some things I wasn't like, I was trying to like do the comics without letting anyone know I worked at DreamWorks.
Right.
So just make sure that the right. comics did the work that they were supposed
yeah,
to do.
Yeah.
And that people didn't say, let's go look at this DreamWorks artist's
right.
comic.
Mm.
That's
so, actually pretty noble of you.
So it wasn't until after it was yeah. successful that I was like, oh, by the way, I'm working at DreamWorks.
See, I would have been the other guy. I'd have been like, yeah, I'm this guy from DreamWorks. Come check out this thing.
Yeah. So, but yeah, ever since I've kind of moved, I haven't been as transparent. And I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm afraid of, you know, it's like, I'm afraid everyone will, you know, judge what I'm doing with my money, but you know, I don't make hardly any money. So I think you're right. It would be probably really empowering to just be like,
yeah,
here's the reality. And I mean, people love the transparency too.
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I think at whatever level, and even just having the conversation, I think is incredibly
yeah.
viable. It's like,
yeah.
you know, It just needs to be part of what people think
it does,
about
yeah.
as they're building.
Totally.
The,
yeah.
Especially towards the type of career where you really are.
Yeah.
You're running a business. I mean,
yeah.
there's no other way of saying
yeah.
it. Like,
so weird. Such
yeah.
a weird idea. I'm
yeah.
running a business.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I always just wanted to be an artist. And
yeah.
then I realized, oh, well, I like to do narrative art. And then it was like, oh, wait, I need to do a business to
yeah.
make my own narrative art.
Right.
Oh, that means taxes.
Yeah. Damn it. Yeah, I don't love that part either.
Accountants,
but...
you know, shipping,
yeah.
fulfillment. Yeah,
yeah,
all the stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun, though. I would not want to change the situation, you know,
yeah.
at all now.
Well, I think you've got a perspective on it, which I think is really healthy. And I think it's, you know, it's something I think about in a lot of different areas of life, which is you can have a great time doing what you're doing, or you
mm-hmm.
can have a miserable time doing what you're doing. You're still
yeah.
doing it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so, you know,
yeah.
it's a lot of it is creating context, you know,
yeah.
around the things that you may not love to do, but you can
yeah.
sort of realize and have it be an empowering thing as opposed to a disempowering thing where it's like,
mm-hmm.
oh, I get to do fulfillment because X
yeah.
number of people
yeah.
want this thing
yeah.
in their hand. So
exactly.
it's like, this
yeah.
is not a chore. This is actually part of the process
yeah.
that allows me to do this thing that I love.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good, it's true or it's not true, but you might as well choose something that makes
yeah.
it valuable and rewarding as
yeah,
opposed
yeah.
to.
And there's,
yeah,
you know, you can
sucks.
Always like, you know, outsource certain
yeah,
things. That's,
yeah.
that's been a huge lesson for
yes,
me. Is just
yeah.
outsourcing anything has,
yeah.
was so foreign to me.
Mm.
And now I have an assistant
mm.
who helps me with a lot of the coloring, you know, and I'm
yeah.
like, how could I have done all this
yeah.
stuff without him now, you
yeah.
know? And, yeah, so it's just outsourcing you know, just sharing some of the hats now. It's
yeah.
like, as it grows, I realize these hats are getting bigger and bigger. All
yes.
the hats are bigger.
Yeah.
So eventually it'll crush me unless I start dividing it up
yeah.
to different responsibilities that I do and don't have now. So
yeah.
that's been a big lesson to learn.
So that's a natural segue into like, what is the actual work look like? So when
mm.
you're sitting down to, you know, do a page, I think you're working
mm-hmm.
digitally, right? So, but how are you working? What are you working in? Like, what's the real
mm-hmm.
nuts and bolts of how you make this stuff?
Well, I've been using Clip Studio and Photoshop a lot.
Yeah.
On a Cintiq.
Yeah.
The last, well, Phobos and Shapes was all done on the Cintiq.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't do anything traditionally.
Yeah.
Scyther was drawn on the Cintiq and then printed out, and then I would ink it with a Pentel brush pen.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that method.
Mm.
That's one of my favorites still, but it's a little slower.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, so... I've adapted to everything digital now, but I think ideally, I want to go back on my next serious book. I do want to go back and have a real medium that I'm actually using, whether it's pencil or. I kind of like the idea of getting the bristle board that's for the standard American comic pages, but turning it on its side and doing a double page spread on it. Because I like doing it at the size that it's going to be printed. At least that's how Scissor was. So anyway, it's pretty much all digital now, though. And yeah, I just, it's, I'll spend, you know, 6 to 8 hours just on the Cintiq. And that's most of the day. You know, it depends. I'll have different weeks where I have to put on the different hats. And I gotta, like when I go back, well, like right now, I came down here to deliver books to my distributor. And figured I might as well hit up some old friends and meet you and finally face to face. And, but I go back, on Sunday, I need to do critique videos for CGMA because I'm teaching these CGMA classes. And for making comics. So I need to do that on Sunday. And then Monday, we're starting fulfillment of Citra because we just, my brother's coming into town. We're just going to be crushing out all the orders. Like we have like about 800 orders left to go. And, you know, some of them are like 6 books or 8 books in a box. So it's really big, heavy orders. And so that's going to be all week. And so, you know, there's weeks where it's just like, okay, I'm just doing random things. And then, after that, Shapes is launching on Kickstarter or Indiegogo on the second week of March. So my main focus then will be, you know, not drawing or creating anything. It'll just be making YouTube videos, kind of promoting that, trying to get word out. And I also have cognitive drawing kind of in proofreaders' hands right now. So once I'm getting notes back from them, I'm going to be retooling that in InDesign. So that's going to last, you know, another week or so. So we're already getting into like, you know, half the month and I haven't done any drawing. You know? And then, you know, once cognitive drawings in the printers and the Shapes Indiegogo is kind of in about a week or two running, then I'll probably have some breathing room and I'll probably start working on Phobos pages again. So, you know, it's, that's just the way it goes. But it's like, it's almost like 50% of the time is actually drawing and and the other 50% is everything else. And, you know, it keeps it fun. It keeps it entertaining. You know, as long as I'm not doing taxes. I keep bringing that up. It's on my mind.
I know. It's coming. It's looming.
Taxes. So I got to do it. That'll be thrown in there somewhere.
It's definitely looming.
But
yeah, man, that's awesome. Well, I am so happy that we got a chance to sit down and talk and to meet face to face. I mean, I am so happy and really proud of having your work on the platform and kind of the evolution of continuing to bring stuff over. It's been, as I said, so much fun to do that. So thank you for being part of this crazy, additional crazy part of the journey.
I love being here.
Where do you, I mean, in a perfect world, like, do you want to see this stuff translate into other mediums? Would you like to see the animated version or the film version?
I would, you know, when I started working on Remind, I was like, I'm going to make a project that is very true to me that people would be crazy to try to turn into an animation. Like the industry will never accept it because it's too bizarre. But now I think we're in a world where bizarre is the norm. And so like with things like Netflix series and stuff, it's like, man, this could really work. You know? Suddenly it's like, okay. So anyway, the mindset was I just want to create intellectual property for the next like 10 years, have my bookshelf full of it. And then when the time comes for me to switch gears to try to shop my stuff around, I'll have a huge library. And so I've kind of stayed in that mentality of just, I got to make the stuff. I got to finish the stuff. Finish. And I know there will come a time when I do want to just switch gears and just try to be making connections, selling intellectual property. And I've been doing it a little bit, but it's mainly when people come to me. But like Remind was translated into German and printed by Tokyo Pop German, the German version.
Very cool.
And so that was cool. Remind and Scythra are on, are getting converted to French for this like Webtoon style French app called Much Room Editions. And so that's going to launch later this year. So
I can absolutely see that working for a French audience. Yeah.
So, you know, there's some possible good revenue with that. But, you know, that's still just a comic. It's not translating to an animation. So, circling all the way back around. Yes, I eventually dream of the day when I have, stuff being developed in all kinds of different mediums. Yeah. Based on a library that I've have on my bookshelf, you know, and I control all the rights and to it, you know, like that's so cool. I just always loved that idea. There was nothing more scary than, you know, having a company own the rights to something that I've created and they just shelf it, you know, like that's just so terrifying.
Yeah.
And I think that's what every artist is afraid of. And that's why they're afraid to show anything or whatever.
Right.
So, but, it's just gotta be the right timing. Right now I'm still in that like birthing phase. I'm just trying to like have as many children as I can. not physically, but intellectual properties.
Yeah.
And, I think, you know, it just goes back to that quote, luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. I want to have all the preparation done.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, and also, you know, as I get older, it's like, you know, you can't do things as fast. You kind of, you get tired, you know, faster.
Right.
You know, I have two kids. And so it's like, I want to get all this stuff out of my system as fast as I can while I have that energy to do it.
Yeah.
Because when I'm 60, I don't know if I'll be able to do a 1,000-page graphic novel.
Right.
I just don't know. You know? I might, but
let's say you will, but you might like to have the option or to do it or not. Yeah.
I'd love to just keep making stuff. And, but part of it is ignorance too. I don't really know the right way to go about selling stuff and getting it out there. I know I need to get the agent. I know I need to get whatever, but where to go to find the right ones.
Yeah.
I've had bad agents in the past and I'm just like, I don't want to waste my time.
Yeah.
You know, I've had good agents too. So I know how good that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I figure if I just keep making really good stuff that turns people's heads, then the right people will start coming to me.
Yeah. Well, it seems like it's worked so far that way.
So far it works, you know, and I just got to keep my head down, keep going. And it's nice that I'm in Idaho in my own studio because it's like, there's so little distraction and I don't get caught up with, you know, what everyone else is doing.
Right.
And so, part of it is a blessing, you know, but it also keeps me ignorant of how to like do it right.
Yeah.
And,
well, it sounds like it does create the structure to do the thing that you're doing.
It kind of, it does help me to do the thing that I tell everyone to do which is get the thing done.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to just get a lot of things done.
Yeah.
And then eventually I think,
I'll
have this nice seedbed of ideas that I can just start selling to different people. And I think as soon as one studio jumps on, other studios will be like, oh, what other properties do you have?
For sure.
And I'm like, come on in, guys. The doors are open. We have this, you know.
Welcome to the candy store.
You know, who has the best bid?
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, as long as I can keep making it and keep making the money to live, I want to just make as many things as I can and put my heart into it, make it honest, real good stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think the right people will come at the right time.
Yeah.
So that's the way I look at it.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, we'll start wrapping up. We tend to end these episodes with a little bit of a dive into pop culture. So what are some of the things that have been working for you recently, or what are some things you've watched or listened to or kind of enjoyed in the larger pop culture landscape recently?
Let's see. I took a deep dive into, I shouldn't even say it. Never mind. Okay. I'll tell you after.
Oh, no, you got to say it now.
I can't. It's going to give away too much ideas for the next.
Okay. So it's not embarrassment. It's spoiler.
It's kind of spoiler material. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Then you'll have to come back.
Yeah. It was documentaries and all kinds of stuff on a certain subject.
Okay.
Let's see.
people are going to die.
I stumbled over not saying this a couple times.
Yeah. Okay. So beyond reference material, are you watching anything? Are you listening to podcasts? Like what are some of the things that you've enjoyed recently?
I've been listening to this audiobook called Extreme Ownership. Mm-hmm. So that's really been awesome.
Yeah. What is that?
It's It's this like this Navy SEAL guy who is business coaching. And he's like, they're like translating all the lessons they learned in being Navy SEALs to businesses.
That's cool.
And it's just this extreme ownership. The general idea of that is just, if you have a group of people, a platoon or something under you or a company or whatever, and things mess up, if you start blaming all the people, then that instills that in the culture of your company and they blame things.
Yeah.
But if you take complete ownership of every problem because it's you not communicating to them or whatever, and even with your family or whatever, then it that mentality trickles down to everybody. And then everyone's just like amazing leaders in your company kind of because they're everyone's taking extreme ownership of the situation.
Yes.
And, you know, so it's just been, it's like a business type, how to type.
Yeah. I mean, go back to what we're talking about. That's important. Yeah.
I also loved, I also just listened to that book, Going Clear about Scientology, which was really interesting.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of the show. I just got through power watching a show through Netflix and I can't remember what it was. It was like, it must have not been that interesting.
It wasn't as impactful.
Oh my goodness. I don't know.
All right. If it comes back to you, now, you know, we touched on Star Wars. Did you see Rise of Skywalker?
I haven't. Okay. And I haven't seen the Mandalorian either because I don't have the Apple.
Yeah.
Disney Plus.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm planning on getting it.
Yeah.
And I really want to see that.
Yeah.
One of the series I liked was that Servant on Apple TV.
Yeah, yeah.
That was really
I was
really
surprised by how
weird.
Much I liked that as well. Yeah.
It's weird, especially because, you know, I have little kids and it's like, man, it's like, and my wife went through postpartum depression, so there was like a lot of like really kind of close to home things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you just, whoo, it was just intense.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, me and my wife watched that and we were both just like, mm-mm.
Yeah.
No, what's going to happen? And it kind of has that weird, like culty side of it too, which is like, I don't know. I always love that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway.
No, I was surprised how much I liked that. And I don't know if you like comedies like Mythic Quest, which is also on Apple TV Plus.
Oh, okay.
It's really funny. So
I saw an advertisement for it. I haven't tried it yet.
It's I don't know if you saw any of Silicon Valley on HBO. It's kind of Silicon Valley in the game development world. But it's pretty funny. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I haven't done a lot of binge watching.
Yeah.
I go through moments where I don't watch any TV and then I watch it every night, you know?
Yeah.
And so sometimes I'm just like in the just the boring, like must get this project done. And then I go home and I read a little bit and I'm reading some books that are kind of like, I don't know so this is really super deep. have you read the book, Man's Search for Meaning?
I've heard
Viktor Frankl.
No, I haven't. No.
Oh, it's just so intense and heavy. It's really short, really simple, but it's all the from a psychologist point of view of you know, people who've gone through the concentration camps.
Mm, wow.
And it's just he went through it and he was like, it's not talking necessarily about the details of it,
right.
But it does, but it's talking about people afterwards and how they cope with it. And it's really weird, the comparison between that he drew, that I was comparing it to, I guess. He didn't compare this, but when the people got out and they had this hope of like, I'm going to return home and everybody will be like, oh, you made it. And and my family will be there or someone or this or that. And it was like everybody was just, they got out, but that the hope was not fulfilled. And so it was hard for them to cope with real life, even though they're out of that horrible situation.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really interesting, and this is might sound stupid, but you know, when you finish a project, you have this vision and this hope of like, I'm going to get this thing done. And and there's always this post-project depression that happens.
Right.
And it was really weird how even the worst of situations, like being in almost dying and being skin and bones in a concentration camp and getting out, has kind of this letdown when you achieve victory over it.
Interesting.
It's just, oh man, I don't know if you want to even put that in the podcast.
Yeah,
but
it's interesting. Yeah.
It's just like, it's such a strange thing, like this whole concept of you have to dream for the future. And he was saying that, like, you have to have a hope for the future to be better in order to even want to live now. Yeah. And so, you know, that applies to depression that's rampant now, you know. Yeah. But if you lose that hope thinking the future will not be better, then you lose the will to live.
Right.
But that hope is also the thing that, like, once you get what you've attained, it's always usually a letdown.
Right.
Because it's different.
Yes.
It's, people won't respond the way you think.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's so interesting and fascinating.
It is. I mean, to swing it back around, I think, you know, where I've come to in that is it's, you know, so much about learning to love the process that,
yeah,
you know, if you get attached to the results,
yeah,
this is a weird segue off of a talking about concentration camp survivors.
Yeah. You can't love that process.
But I think, you know, that is, you know, from a creativity creation standpoint, it's like, you know, if you can really just let yourself get into the weeds of the, it's the process that matters. It's not the results that matter. And you do everything you can to create the result that you need or that you want, but
you have to let that go. Yeah.
And then it's gotta
be. But you have to have that hope.
Yes. Yes.
But you can't expect that hope to be fulfilled, I guess, in the way you expect it to.
Well, it's all, you know, it also
I'm wrestling with it.
No, I think it's a great thing to be wrestling with. And I think it, you know, it also goes to, you know, I think I'm very guilty of this where it's like I attach my identity to things like, you know, how much money am I making or how successful do I feel like I am at the moment? Or like, you know, am I doing something that's worth talking about? It's like, you know, I'm very guilty of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, very much recognize that, you know, it's like those that, you know, having that be the measure of my own value is not necessarily healthy, nor does it necessarily create great, you know, the best possible relationships with other people. It's like,
totally.
So, you know, trying to kind of, I constantly try to kind of keep an awareness of like, you know, the, you know, going back to that same thing of like, it's the process, it's the, it's the being in the moment. It's not, you know, kind of being attached to these external results as a measure of my own value.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, for whatever that's worth.
Oh, but, just jumped off into the deep end right there. Yeah. Way to end the show.
Yeah. On that note, well, Jason, I'm so psyched that we got to sit down and talk, and then I got to meet you in person. I hope there's a lot for us to do together
over the
near term and long term.
Yeah.
And man, I'm just so excited about your work and the work that you're bringing into the world and all the new stuff that we haven't seen yet. I want to scheme and strategize with you a little bit off mic about what we might be able to do in that regard and
perfect
go from there. So that is this Makerverse edition of the Mythmakers podcast with Jason Brubaker, Coffee Table Comics. Where can people find you all over the interwebs and such?
Go to coffeetablecomics.com, join my mailing list. That's the best way for me to get you information on campaigns I'm launching and everything I'm doing. There's also a YouTube channel, which I try to be consistent with, even though sometimes I'm not. Yeah. But I have interviews and blogs and vlogs, and I'm trying to translate books into episodes that I could show on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, YouTube, go to Coffee Table Comics on YouTube or Jason Brubaker.
Fantastic. YouTube. And you're on Instagram and all that stuff too? Or
you know what? I have abandoned all social media.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah.
So 2020, I'm social media free. Fantastic. I still have it, you know, but I'm not posting anything on it.
Yeah.
It's kind of an experiment and me just like standing up to the man. So
okay, so Coffee Table Comics mailing list and YouTube.
And
those
YouTube.
Those are the places. Fantastic. Well, thank you again so much. And more to come.
Yep.